Welcome to Base by Base, the podcast of genomic discoveries. Imagine a tiny protein inside your body. It's locked in this intense, high-stakes arms race with a virus that's evolving incredibly fast. This protein, it absolutely needs to adapt and quickly just to keep you healthy. But how does it do that? How does it manage to change its shape, its function, to outsmart this constantly shifting enemy? Is it through these like subtle tiny tweaks, like slowly refining a tool over time? Or could it be something, much more dramatic, something we might usually overlook when we think about evolution? What if the really big, impactful changes aren't the ones we've been focusing on so much in evolutionary biology? What if just one seemingly small genetic event could suddenly unlock a powerful new defense, something that dozens of other little changes just couldn't achieve? We're about to take a deep dive into a study that asks precisely these questions and honestly kind of turns some long-held assumptions on their head. Today, we want to celebrate the really groundbreaking work of Jeanette L103, Michael Emmerman, Harmit S. Malik, and their colleagues. You're at the University of California, San Francisco, and the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Center. Their research, which was published in Cell Genomics, has really pushed forward our understanding of how these critical antiviral proteins evolve. Okay, so let's set the stage here a bit. Our bodies have these amazing frontline defenses. They're called restriction factors. Right. You can think of them as our molecular bouncers, maybe innate immune proteins doing direct antiviral work. They're specialized to spot and block viruses right when they try to get in.
Exactly. And that dynamic sets up this constant evolutionary arms race. It's happening all the time inside us. Viruses are always trying to figure out ways to sneak past these defenses. And at the same time, our restriction factors are evolving to recognize and counter those new viral tricks. So these proteins are under immense selective pressure. They have to evolve rapidly just to keep up.
Right. And one of the really key players in this fight, especially against retroviruses, think HIV and its relatives, is a protein called TREM5. Its secret weapon, so to speak, is this specific, very flexible bit known as the V1 loop.
Mm-hmm.
It acts like a tiny sensor, right? Binding directly to the incoming virus's capsid.
Mm-hmm. The capsid, that's the protective shell around the viral genes. And what's really fascinating is just how diverse this V1 loop is across different primate species. It varies a lot, not just in the amino acid sequence, but, its actual physical length can change too. This rapid divergence, this variety, it strongly suggests this loop is critical for those species-specific antiviral jobs. Now, for a long, long time, the main focus in studying how proteins evolve has been on what we call missense mutations. Those single letter changes in the DNA code that swap out just one amino acid for another.
Yeah, those subtle shifts. We've learned a lot from studying those.
We certainly have. A lot of adaptation has been linked to them.
But the big question this study really tackled was, are those small step-by-step changes always enough for every single challenge a virus throws at us? Because they looked in a really specific kind of stubborn problem for our human TREM5 protein.
Indeed. It's a great example. Human TREM5, it can actually gain the ability to restrict HIV-1 with just one single missense mutation. That's a relatively easy evolutionary jump. But it faced what seemed like an almost insurmountable challenge trying to restrict a different virus, SAVSAB. That's a simian immunodeficiency virus found in sub-AS monkeys. And despite looking really thoroughly, checking every possible single missense mutation in that crucial V1 loop, human TREM5 just couldn't get the ability to fight SIVSAB.
It just couldn't make that leap with those small changes.
Exactly.
It hit a wall.
And they didn't just stop at single mutations, did they? I remember they also tried combinations, like trying to copy the mutations found in rhesus macaques because their TREM5 can restrict SIVSAB.
That's right. They really pushed it. They wanted to see if it could follow that conventional path. And interestingly, swapping the entire V1 loop from the rhesus monkey TREM5 into the human protein did work. It boosted the SIVSAB restriction.
Okay, so the loop itself was definitely the key region.
Correct. But here's the catch. To get that same effect using individual mutations, the human TREM5 needed to pick up at least 6 very specific changes all at once. And that included both amino acid swaps and an insertion. a mix of changes. Crucially, each one of those six changes only really helped if the other five were already there.
Ah, so no easy stepping stones, no intermediate versions that offered a slight advantage.
Precisely. No advantageous evolutionary intermediates for natural selection to grab onto and build from. It really highlights how incredibly unlikely it would be for this particular antiviral function to evolve just through those sequential one-at-a-time missense mutations. It looked like a dead end.
Okay, so if the usual suspects, the single amino acid swaps, weren't cutting it against SIVSAP, how do they approach this? This seemingly impossible evolutionary hurdle. This is where I think it gets really interesting. They looked beyond the obvious.
They did. While missense mutations get most of the attention, there's another type of mutation, insertions or deletions. We call them indels. And they're actually the second most common type of genetic variation in humans. They account for like 10 to 20% of the changes between individuals. These often get overlooked, but they can dramatically change a protein's length and its overall structure. Think bigger rearrangements, not just tiny tweaks.
Right. And I know frame shift in indels, where the reading frame gets messed up, are almost always bad news. They just scramble the whole protein message downstream.
Mm-hmm.
But even in-frame indels, the ones that add or remove whole amino acids without scrambling the rest, they're often seen as detrimental too, right? Because they can potentially mess up the protein structure.
The conventional wisdom, yeah.
Yeah.
They can introduce bulges or gaps, potentially destabilizing things.
So actually exploring whether these could have a beneficial function, that was a pretty bold move, kind of pushing against the grain.
It absolutely was. And they developed this really clever new method. They called it deep indel scanning, or DIS. This wasn't just looking at a few possibilities. They systematically created this huge library of human TRIM-SARMBE variants. It contained every possible in-frame deletion or duplication from one amino acid up to 9 amino acids long.
Wow, every single one.
Every single one at every single position or codon within that V1 loop. It was designed to mimic the kind of errors that happen naturally during DNA replication, those slippage events that are known to cause indels, a really comprehensive, unbiased look.
Okay, so they built this massive library of potential indel mutations. Then what? How did they test them?
They put them through their paces. They expressed each of these thousands of TRIM-SARMBE variants in cells. Then they infected those cells with the virus, SIVSAB. And using high-throughput methods, fluorescence-activated cell sorting, and deep sequencing, they could precisely identify which specific indel mutations actually gave the cells the ability to restrict SIVSAB.
So a powerful way to sift through thousands of variants and find the winners.
Exactly. A combination of smart library design and powerful screening.
And what did they find? After all that work looking at missense mutations and finding it so difficult,
yeah.
What did the indel scan show?
Well, the result was really quite striking, and it stood in stark contrast to what they saw with the missense mutations. Remember how human TRIM and FEVA needed that complex set of at least 6 simultaneous changes to even begin restricting SIVSAB?
Yeah, that seemed almost impossible to achieve naturally.
Right, but the deep indel scanning, it revealed that just a single indel mutation was enough. Specifically, duplicating just one amino acid of phenylalanine at position 339, they called it F339ODEP. That single duplication enabled human TRIM and FAVA to potently restrict SIVSAB. One single change did the job.
Wow, just one amino acid duplication. So adding one building block had the same power as needing 6 or more specific point mutations plus an indel. That's incredible. That's a genuine evolutionary leap achieved in a single step.
It really is. It's like finding an express elevator instead of having to climb the stairs one by one. The single indel conferred an antiviral function basically equivalent to swapping in the entire rhesus macaque V1 loop.
Which involved 9 separate differences, you said.
That's right. 8 missense changes and a 2 amino acid insertion in the rhesus version. This one duplication achieved something similar. And what's more, this F339 distub mutation didn't just help against SIVSAB, it actually broadened human TRIMERO's repertoire. It gave it the ability to restrict HIV-1 and SIVCPZ as well. And importantly, its original function against a different virus, NMLV, was completely untouched. It remained fully functional.
So a pure gain of function with no obvious downside, no evolutionary trade-off.
Exactly. It seems like a remarkably beneficial mutation from an evolutionary standpoint.
Okay, but wait. This wasn't just something they cooked up in the lab, right? You mentioned they looked at actual evolution.
Yeah.
Did these kinds of indels actually happen out there in nature?
Yes, and this is crucial. They looked at TRIM-FIVA sequences from 51 different simian primate species. And they found really compelling evidence that indel mutations have popped up repeatedly and independently in the V1 loop during primate evolution. Often, interestingly, at the same spots where you also see lots of missense mutations happening, it suggests these are real hotspots for evolutionary change.
Give me an example from nature.
Okay, so that 2-amino acid insertion found naturally in rhesus macaque TREM5A, that's directly linked, causally associated, with its strong ability to restrict acyl sab. And another one. There's a much bigger 20-amino acid duplication that evolved in Sebaceous monkey TREM5A. That duplication is absolutely required for its ability to restrict a different virus, SIVMAP.
So these indels, even larger ones, evolved naturally and gave these monkeys crucial defenses against the viruses they were facing.
Precisely. These aren't just theoretical possibilities. They are documented events in primate evolutionary history.
So even though we might think of indels as high risk because they can mess things up, they actually occurred in nature and conferred significant advantages. That really challenges the standard view.
Absolutely. And they even tested this further. They took that 20-amino acid duplication from the Sebaceous monkey,
yeah,
and they engineered it into either human TREM5A or rhesus TREM5A. And just inserting that duplication was enough to give those proteins a brand new ability de novo restriction against SIVAC.
Wow. That's strong evidence.
It powerfully demonstrates that indels have been direct contributors to the adaptive evolution of primate TREM5A. It shows evolution doesn't always take the slow, steady path. Sometimes these bigger jumps happen, driven by indels.
Okay, so let's unpack the implications here. What does this all mean for how we think about evolution?
Yeah.
We tend to picture it as this very gradual process, right? Small steps accumulating over time. But this study suggests that sometimes, maybe often, especially in these intense arms races, evolution needs to take a more dramatic leap. And indels are the mechanism for that leap.
I think that's a great way to put it. Connecting it to the bigger picture, indels represent a kind of high-risk, high-reward strategy for evolution. Yes, they are frequently damaging, deleterious. But when they do work, they can allow a protein to jump across what might otherwise be an impassable fitness landscape.
Like a valley between two mountains on the fitness landscape.
Exactly. Missense mutations might let you slowly climb the slopes of one mountain, maybe finding slightly better paths. But an indel could potentially let you sort of teleport to a completely different, maybe even higher peak of functionality, one you could never reach by just taking small steps from where you started.
It opens up entirely new adaptive possibility.
Completely new possibilities, especially when those incremental changes just aren't getting the job done.
And the way these indels work might be fundamentally different too. Not just about making the protein stickier, but maybe changing its overall shape or how flexible it is.
That seems to be the case here. The F339 up in Grundel, the one that works so well, didn't just change the electrical charge, which is often what adaptive missense mutations do. Instead, the researchers speculate it likely changed the whole collection, the ensemble of shapes that this floppy, disordered V1 loop can adopt.
So it sort of biased the loop towards useful shapes.
Kind of. By changing its flexibility or dynamics, it might preferentially adopt structures that are better suited for binding to that viral capsid. Perhaps it reduces the energetic cost, the entropic penalty, of forcing that flexible loop into the right shape when it binds the virus. So the overall binding becomes stronger, even if the specific contact points aren't dramatically changed.
That suggests a whole new way proteins can gain functions by tuning their flexibility and dynamics,
yeah,
not just their surface chemistry.
Exactly. It's a different paradigm for adaptation.
And this could be huge, right, for understanding how other antiviral proteins evolve, especially ones that also have these flexible, maybe disordered regions.
Definitely. Think about other proteins locked in similar arms races with rapidly changing pathogens. This mechanism might be widespread.
And could it influence how we design antiviral drugs or therapies?
Potentially, yes. If we understand that these leaps are possible and how they work, maybe we could try to engineer similar changes ourselves, rather than just focusing on tiny modifications based on existing structures.
Interesting. Are there still open questions, though? Things we don't fully understand yet?
Oh, absolutely. This study focused on those in-frame indels, the ones adding or removing whole amino acids. But remember, out-of-phase indels, the ones that cause frame shifts, are actually more common in nature. About 2/3 of natural indels fall into this category. We still need to explore their functional effects much more deeply to get the full picture of how indels drive evolution.
Right. Frame shifts are usually bad, but maybe not always.
Perhaps not always, or maybe they have more complex effects than we assume. It's an area for future research. And of course, directly measuring how, biophysically, these indels increase the binding affinity of Trimfiva for the viral capsid is still a big challenge, especially since the starting affinities for some potent Trimfiva versions are already known to be quite low. So pinning down the exact mechanism of improvement is tricky.
Lots more to explore at the molecular level.
Definitely, but the core message is really clear. The central insight here is that these insertion and deletion mutations, the indels, which we often overlook or dismiss as just disruptive, they are actually powerful drivers of rapid functional novelty, especially in these antiviral proteins. They allow for evolutionary leaps that just seem impossible through those gradual step-by-step missense mutations. It fundamentally changes how we should think about our immune system adapting to new viral threats. So the big question is, what does this really mean for our ongoing battle against evolving pathogens like new viruses? And how might we actually use this knowledge, perhaps, to engineer better antiviral defenses or drugs in the future?
Really makes you think about evolution in a different light. It's not always slow and steady. This deep dive was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this analysis, the best way to support Base by Base is to subscribe or follow in your favorite podcast app and leave us a 5-star rating. It only takes a few seconds, but makes a huge difference in helping others discover the show. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, Base by Base.